Okay, so we're going to read from the Transcendental Diary of Harisori Prabhu. This is from the period November 1975 to April 1976. And we're at the section where Srila Prabhupada is in Mayapur, in the holy dham of Sri Mayapur, Sri Dham Mayapur. February 17th, 1976. Wow. Not about, so this is 32 years ago. Prabhupada, so Prabhupada's in Mayapur. Instead of going to the roof for his morning walk, Prabhupada decided to inspect the construction site of the new building. That must be the long building, probably. A new building at that time was probably the long building. At Mayapur at this time, the original building, of course, was the Lotus Building. The first building there, two floors, and in the beginning, the temple was below there. The whole temple was below that building. So you can imagine it wasn't a very big temple. It seemed quite big at the time. Now, of course, a lot more people coming. Anyway, we just had the one building. The devotees themselves had organized the construction of that building, that first building. It was designed by devotees with the help of Prabhupada's instruction. And then the devotees supervised the construction. The first building, the Lotus Building. It's a very nice building. Very strong. And the rooms are very comfortable. You stay there, they're nice and cool. And you have those big white verandas. The Lotus Building. You notice that? They have a big white veranda right around the whole building. Very nice. We used to, so many, there were, in the beginning, you know, there's only a few rooms, so a lot, we would all be sleeping out in the verandas because there's so many. Verandas are so big and spacious. Below that building used to be the temple room. And then after that, then the wall was built up. The wall was built, and along the wall they put rooms in the back of the wall. So that bound the wall along the main road. They built that wall along the main road, and they put rooms, little rooms, in the back of the wall. And then the long building. Then there was also the Prasadam Pavilion. Anyway, let's see. So work is going on at full speed with hundreds of workers digging, carting, shoring, and stacking. It is an impressive sight. The foundation stretches about 1,000 feet. So this is definitely the long building, which is now known as the Gada Building, is it? Or Chakra Building. Chakra, yeah. The foundation stretches 1,000 feet, the entire length of the northern boundary of our property. It will be an extremely long building, 2 stories high, and built in the same style as the main guest house, with a veranda and decorative arches. They are building the 2 floors upon a high plinth, so if the Ganges floods, the rooms will not be affected. So yeah, they did like that. The chakra building, you know, there's a basement there, and sometimes they do some, they occupy it, they store some things there, but basically it's at the 2 floors above the basement where the rooms are and where devotees stay when you go there. So the accommodation there is quite reasonable. You know, they charge now, I think they charge 100 rupees a night there in the chakra building, unless you go at the Gaur Purnima time when they'll charge you more. But it's quite convenient, nice rooms. When Prabhupada asked what would be done with the plinth, Jayapataka Maharaj said, it will be filled with dirt. Prabhupada considered this a waste of valuable space. He instructed them to make it into a basement instead. That way there will be extra rooms for storage. So this is what happened. They made the basement into rooms for storage. Prabhupada appeared satisfied with the progress of the work and is hopeful that it will be habitable in time for the festival. For class each morning, Dayananda is reading aloud from the unedited transcripts of the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj. While not grammatically correct, the Indian English style of Prabhupada's translation has a unique charm and a flavor of their own. So this is an interesting point. Actually, Harisori Prabhu is remarking about the flavor of Prabhupada's Indian English. That people, you know, a lot of people, there's a number of people who complain they don't like the modern editing because they often revise different editions of Prabhupada's books. And people feel that they've taken a lot of the sweetness away because Prabhupada's way of rendering the English was so nice, it was so pleasing, and then although some people may feel it was not always grammatically correct, it certainly had a charm of its own. It had its own personal flavor which came from Prabhupada. And it was very, very meaningful, pleasing. So today he read text 10 of chapter 9. Prahlad Maharaj continued to think that a brahmana who has qualified himself with all the brahminical qualities, 12 in number, as they are stated in the book known as Sanat Sujata, such a brahmana, if he is not a devotee and to the lotus feet of the Lord, he is especially lower than a devotee who is a dog-eater even. But his mind, words, activities, wealth, and life, everything is dedicated to the Supreme Lord. Such a low person is better than a brahmana, as above mentioned, because such low-born person can purify his whole family, whereas a so-called brahmana, falsely in prestigious position, cannot purify himself. So, this is a text which Prabhupada translated. You can tell it's not been edited yet, but the meaning still is very clear. This is a verse indicating that if one is a devotee of the Lord, who is 100% devoted to the Lord, then he is in a better position than a so-called brahmana who is not a devotee. Even that person is very low-born, he's from a family which are known to be dog-eaters, but still, according to the scriptures, he is better than the so-called brahmana. Why? Because the so-called brahmana cannot purify even himself. He cannot purify even himself. He's simply proud of his position, and he cannot even purify himself. But one who is a devotee of the Lord, even though he's born in a low family, he can purify others. He can purify others. Why? Because he's a devotee of the Lord. Because he chants the holy name. Because he has devotion for Krishna. So Prabhupada gave a long talk. At one stage, he pointed out that in the Vedic civilization, one's position in human society is determined by what he eats. Generally, meat eaters, especially pig and dog eaters, are considered the lowest, untouchable. But worst of all are those who feast on the cow. Prabhupada was at one time he was instructing one of his disciples that he should go and preach in China. I think it was China or Korea or somewhere. And the devotee said, but Prabhupada, the people there eat dogs. Prabhupada said, so what? The people in your country eat cow. He said, eating cow is much worse than eating dog. Yes, people eat dogs. They eat dogs in countries like the Philippines, in China. You don't see so many dogs, but if they do have dogs, they'll eat them. They eat dog also in Korea. I asked how somebody was surprised why we were reading with it says untouchable, like a dog eater. And they were surprised that what's wrong with eating dogs? We're laughing, but you know, at the same time, the same people will go and eat cows, which is much worse. You see, if you have to eat meat, then we should eat the animals which are not important. We should eat the meat of animals which are not valuable. The cow is a valuable creature because everything from her is valuable. Well, even if she's not giving milk, her urine and her stool are valuable and useful. And just by having cows around, they sanctify a place and generate a feeling of the mode of goodness. If people need to eat meat, therefore the Vedas recommend you take a goat, right? You take a goat and you sacrifice it in front of Goddess Kali on the full moon night, and you tell the goat that I'm killing you, in the future you can come and kill me. This is the idea. You want to eat meat? You know, you have to be killed. So, yeah, people are known by what they eat. You can tell who is the meat eater, who uses two hands to eat. People use two hands to eat. You know, this person is a meat eater, or he must have been a meat eater before, in the past. It's quite noticeable. Even, you know, I don't know so much about it. I was in Mayapur, sitting in Mayapur, taking prasadam, and I was taking with a lot of local Bengali people. And they all came down, they sat, I know that every one of them just simply ate prasadam with one hand. With the right hand, they took prasadam very easily. But when I go to other countries outside of India, even I'm with people who are Indian or Nepali, I see them all eating two hands. Even they're supposed to be devotees. They're trying to be devoted and they're still using two hands. Very bad, very low class. So, Prabhupada, of course, that was one of the first things we were always instructed in as devotees, you know, because coming from uncultured backgrounds, we had to learn all of these things. And we were taught how important it is only to take prasadam with the right hand and never touch food with the left hand. So, you know, people will think, how you can eat a chapati with one hand? You know, they're surprised, you know. Yeah, take some practice, you know. But anyway, this is the idea that people are known by what they eat. So, in India, still, generally, those who are meat eaters, they take meat of such animals like goats, lambs, like that. And they never take cow's flesh because cow is protected. Goraksha. So in the Bhagavad Gita, even if you are meat eater, don't eat cow. You can eat other animals, pigs, goats, But don't eat cow's flesh. That is very sinful. So even like, I think, even McDonald's and like that, they have them in India now, that, you know, but they don't use cows. They will use other meats, so meats of these other animals, like goat and so on. Why it is sinful? Prabhupada says, why it is sinful? Because it's a very, very important animal in the human society. Very important animal. You get milk and milk products. Then your brain becomes very nice. Memory sharpened. That is therefore important. Don't eat. But Prabhupada said that in Krishna consciousness, it doesn't matter what one's background is, provided one has adopted the process of Krishna consciousness. So here it is proof that dog eaters or pig eaters or any low-grade man is not prohibited to become a devotee. That is our Krishna consciousness movement. They say that without becoming a Hindu, or born in India, nobody can become Brahmana. Nobody can become sannyasi. But here is the proof. In the Shastra, the dog eater is also highly praised. When he sacrifices everything, his body, his mind, his words, only for Krishna. This is called Tridanda Sannyasa. So this is a Harisori Prabhu is giving a brief excerpt from Prabhupada's talk on that day in Mayapur. Prabhupada is encouraging the devotees, you see, because certainly at that time in Mayapur there were not too many local people. A few, but not many. I know when I was here in Hyderabad, we had very few local people. Now, it's very nice to see all the local people taking an interest in Krishna consciousness. This is very wonderful. Anyway, Prabhupada is explaining here the principle which Lord Chaitanya taught. Because Lord Chaitanya's movement was certainly a revolution against the caste system and such sectarian understandings that unless you are born in the proper family, you have no right to take up the position of devotee or brahmana or sannyasi. But Prabhupada says, here is the proof. This is from the scriptures. In the scriptures it is stated that if one is a devotee, it does not matter what is his past? What is his background? The important thing is that one is in Krishna consciousness. We see the devotees of Krishna are born into all levels of society. And some people are highly educated, whereas others are illiterate. Some devotees, great devotees of the Lord, were blind. Some were crippled and lame. But it is no disqualification to them. Rather, it shows that a devotee of Krishna may appear in any circumstance. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, he himself is born in an atheistic family. His father is Hiranyakashipu. So his father was a great demon, the king of the Asuras. But Prahlad is Rajabhakta Prahlad, right? He's a great devotee. He's one of the Mahajans, one of the authorities of devotional service. We don't say Prahlad Maharaj is disqualified because of his birth, being born in a demonic family. So in the same way, anyone, regardless of their birth, they can be situated in Krishna consciousness. Okay, but now they go on. Harisori goes on to talk about different devotees. He said, Guru Kripa and Hridayananda Swamis arrive back from Calcutta. Hridayananda Maharaj has to wait for his visa to go to Bangladesh. Guru Kripa paid only a quick visit to the boat before deciding to return to Mayapur to take advantage of Srila Prabhupada's association. So Guru Kripa is a very nice person. He that time he was a Swami. He's not a Swami anymore, but he's still a devotee and he's still very attached to the ISKCON movement and a loyal follower of Srila Prabhupada. Just as he mentions here, Prabhupada had asked him to go on a boat and go and preach somewhere in Bengal, but he decided to return to Mayapur because he knew Prabhupada's in Mayapur. And he's always been attached, but he was always very attached to Srila Prabhupada and taking advantage of Prabhupada's association. And even in his home now, where he lives now in Bangkok, in Thailand, in his home, he has so much memorabilia of Srila Prabhupada. He has Prabhupada's shoes, he has the water pot which Prabhupada used to drink water from when he was on the boat going to America. He had one lota, Guru Kripa has it. He has many different things of Prabhupada's. So some some devotees are very attached. They have that affection for Prabhupada, deep attachment. During the massage today, Harisori Prabhu was expert in giving Srila Prabhupada massage. Harisori is quite strong physically, and he could give a very satisfying massage. Prabhupada liked his massage. So during the massage today, Prabhupada received a letter, an article entitled Matter Comes from Life, written by Madhava Das, another of our PhD scientists. The article, which is to be published in Back to Godhead magazine, established scientifically that matter comes from life. Madhava is confident that this point has been proven to the scientists by utilizing newfound experimental evidence, documentation, and many logical arguments. He also submitted a list of 4 questions that he hoped Srila Prabhupada would answer because, as he put it, you are Sat-Chit Ananda and are thus full of transcendental knowledge. So, of course, this preaching to the scientists, this was something which Prabhupada wanted very much. Prabhupada established the Bhaktivedanta Institute and he wanted, you know, we saw yesterday Dhanavir Goswami presenting how Prabhupada wanted the planetarium. He wanted to use the Vedas and the knowledge of the scriptures to preach Krishna consciousness to the scientists because he knew the scientists are people who influence the world today. There are no brahmanas guiding the world today. It's all the scientists who are guiding the world, making all the innovations and influencing people's thinking. So Prabhupada wanted that our own devotees, people from scientific background, could go on and utilize their scientific education to preach Krishna consciousness. So, of course, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj was one such person who became a devotee while he was still doing his PhD and then went on to preach Krishna consciousness in a very big way. Madhava, who is mentioned here, he eventually left ISKCON some years after Prabhupada departed. He left ISKCON and went some other place. But there's a few other people like Sadaputta Prabhu, who is he's still doing some research on this work. So the first question was, Jung has said that matter is just a symbol or name, Jung. This is one of the philosopher, Jung, has said that matter is just a name that we apply to reality, but we may as well call it spirit or consciousness or any other name. Is this view consistent with our philosophy? Prabhupada replied, matter originally is spirit. And when spirit is not distinctly understood, that is matter. Just like a tree is also a manifestation of spirit soul, but the consciousness is covered. When the tree is cut, it does not protest, but the moving entity has stronger consciousness than the tree. There is consciousness in the tree thought. Also, consciousness in a dormant state of matter. Consciousness in a completely developed state is spirit. Matter is a symbol of undeveloped consciousness. So Prabhupada has answered very clearly here, that matter is originally spirit. It is just undeveloped. Undeveloped consciousness. His second question was in regard to the function of the mind. Does thinking occur in words, pictures, or what? The function of the mind. Mind is active in thinking and feeling and willing. So he's asking about the first phase of the mind, thinking, desire. The first phase is thinking. He wants to know, does this thinking occur? Is it words or is it pictures? What is it? Prabhupada says, thinking is a subtle form of matter. Prabhupada answered, just like it says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhumerapo nalo vayu. Means what? Earth, water, fire, air. Said, like the ether is subtle, the mind is more subtle. Subtle form of matter. So, this is Prabhupada's reply that this thinking is something subtle. It's not pictures, it's not words, it's subtle. It's thought. The third question concerning the external world, which we perceive only through our senses, and thus the mind, and ultimately the consciousness. What does this say about where things are actually happening? Is it in the mind, out there in the world, or in the spiritual world? It's a little difficult to understand this question. I'll read it again. The third question concerning the external world, which we perceive only through our senses, and thus the mind, and ultimately the consciousness. What does this say about where things are actually happening? Are things actually happening in the mind? Or are they actually happening in the world? Or are they happening in the spiritual world? Prabhupada wrote, everything is in the spiritual world. Krishna is the sum total of spirit, and everything is coming from Him. Matter, spirit, everything comes from Him. He is the Supreme Life, the origin of spirit and life. Therefore, matter emanates from life. Nityo Nityanam. He is the Supreme Consciousness of all other consciousness. So, Prabhupada's reply, everything is in the spiritual world. Finally, Madhava asked for direction on how to prove that the moon is further away than the sun. Now the Vedas tell us the moon is further away than the sun. So Madhava wants to know how to prove it. Prabhupada said, the moon is situated 1,600,000 miles above the sun. You may refer to the fifth canto and read carefully. So everything is in Prabhupada's book. We want to know these things. You can find it in Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada is extremely eager for this scientific preaching to be developed. He told Madhava that it must be recognized that we are not just a religious sect. You see, Prabhupada says, we are not just a religious sect. It's science. You know, if you're preaching science, if you just come along with some other religion, then the scientists will just say, oh, this is just some religious belief, you see. So Prabhupada was aware that the scientists would simply try to dismiss our Krishna consciousness preaching. Just some religion. This is just some religion, some belief. You shouldn't listen. Don't waste your time listening to them. This is all hodgepodge. You're just sentimental people. Prabhupada wanted that they should have a scientific basis. And they should preach in a scientific manner. Not as some religious society. Recently, Madhava taught a course at the prestigious MIT in Boston. MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. A very prestigious school, not easy to get a place as a student. So Madhava, one of the devotees, he had taught a course there entitled Truth Beyond Relativity. The course was based on understanding the three aspects of the absolute truth. Three aspects means? Yeah, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And it was so well received that 8 scientists took copies of Bhagavad Gita. This is the kind of news that delights Srila Prabhupada. And he ended his reply by telling him, I am very much pleased with your program. Thank you very much. Prabhupada also stated that he wants ISKCON scientists to publish their research articles in Karmi science magazines as well. If they don't accept what we say, we will go on explaining. And if they do accept, then that is their benefit and our victory. So there are so many of these Karmi science magazines. You know, you should try to write some articles. Some of the devotees in Pune, they have a science journal, a science bulletin they put out. But Prabhupada wanted that we get our articles into other people's magazines. That's the best. Regarding his answers to Madhava's questions about how to distinguish between spirit and matter, I questioned Srila Prabhupada further on it in mid-afternoon. He told me, yes, everything is Krishna's energy. Krishna is the Supreme Spirit and everything is coming from Him. Krishna is everything. Sarva Bhutastam Atmanam. Just like skin and fingernail, both grow from the same source. Yet, in one there is feeling, and then in the other there is none. One can be cut, and the other cannot. But it is the same energy coming from the same source. Matter comes from light, and that light is the Brahmajyoti, which is Krishna's bodily effulgence. So Prabhupada has given a very wonderful example there. You know, you can just see the potency Prabhupada's preaching. You can see such a wonderful and so clear example. It said, just like skin and fingernail, both grow from the same source. But in one there is feeling, and the other there is none. You can cut the fingernail, you don't feel anything. But when you cut the skin, you feel it, right? But they're both coming from the same place. They're both growing there, the same part of the same body. One has got consciousness and the other hasn't. So, matter comes from light. The light is the Brahmajyoti, Krishna's bodily effulgence. So in this way, Prabhupada shows a distinction here between matter and spirit. As the massage continued, Prabhupada listened to a compilation of the best reviews of his books, including ones from Oxford and Harvard University. Hearing these reviews, he became very enlivened. he enthusiastically told Dayananda and Hridayananda Maharaj that he is eager to publicize his books here in India. He wants a special office set up exclusively for this purpose. He said that he will give personal direction if a good man will take up the engagement. Dayananda was so inspired, he immediately volunteered himself, and Prabhupada accepted. Well, I don't know what happened, but Dayananda's back in America now. He's been in America for quite a long time. But anyway, you appreciate the point, Prabhupada, how important Prabhupada's books were to him, that Prabhupada separated the BBT from ISKCON, because he thought that if anything happens to ISKCON, at least the BBT can go on, at least his books would remain. So he did want to encourage the publication and distribution of his books. So you see Prabhupada, how he was handling everything. He was the inspiration behind everything, and he didn't just give the inspiration, but he had to deal with all the problems as they came up. The scientist has got questions, Prabhupada has to guide them, he has to explain everything, answer their questions for them. So while Prabhupada was here, we always had Prabhupada to go to and put our questions to him. In Prabhupada's absence, the responsibility is fallen on the devotees themselves, that they have to take up the work and go on, continue. Then, now it mentions about two other sannyasis, Achyutananda and Yashodananda Swami. They had both been here in Hyderabad, and they were very significant in establishing this Hyderabad temple. They collected a lot of funds, they traveled in South India, and they gave the money they collected for the construction of this Hyderabad temple in the beginning. So Achyutananda and Yashodananda Swamis arrived in the evening from South India. They gave an encouraging account of their successful preaching activities in many cities. The leaders of the Ramanuja and Madhva Sampradayas received them well. They even got letters of appreciation from them, commending the work that Srila Prabhupada is doing, and clearly stating their acceptance of his disciples as genuine Vaishnavas. So this was very important, that the Ramanuja and Madhva Sampradayas, the big acharyas in these Sampradayas, recognized the Hare Krishna movement as being authentic and according to Vaishnava principles. They appreciated everything we were doing, marking our body with the vertical Kundra Tilak, just as they do, and wearing the Kunti Mala, the Tulsi beads around our neck. They appreciated all of these things. They were very happy to meet these two sannyasis, Yashodananda Swami, Achyutananda Swami. And today, of course, we still see that same cooperation, Ramanuja and Madhva Sampradaya. They keep friendly relationships. Prabhupada told us today that everyone should shave up every Purnima or full moon. On the full moon, shave your head. And sometimes Prabhupada would say after Ekadasi, here it says on Purnima. February 18th, 1976. With so many sannyasis around, I am constantly being asked to run here and there on errands. This distracts me from my service to Srila Prabhupada, but it is difficult to refuse their requests. Therefore, I asked Srila Prabhupada during his walk what I should do. His simple quote made things very clear. Everybody's servant is no one's servant. That settled my mind. I decided to tend to him alone, and the sannyasis will have to make their own arrangements. There is concern among the sannyasis that some of the sannyasi candidates are not actually qualified for the renounced order. One candidate in particular, Mahavira Prabhu, is under question. Without naming any names, Jayapataka Maharaj brought up his doubt to Srila Prabhupada. Brahmacharis don't like to take instructions from the elder devotees, and then they want to take sannyas, so they think they can be independent and give orders themselves and not listen. Prabhupada replied that therefore sannyas should not be given all of a sudden. The problem is that they want to become sevya instead of sevak. They want to be served instead of being a servant. With a few brief words, Prabhupada exposed the fundamental problem. With a mixture of humor and irony, he said, "Yes, and ultimately God. When everything failure, then to become God. Everyone, if he wants to become a master, that is materialism." So, this was a phenomena not so common nowadays, but in the 70s, a lot of young men became eager to take sannyas. And one of the reasons why they wanted to become sannyas, because the movement was run by sannyas, you know, all the big managers were actually sannyasis. So people thought, I will take sannyas, and then I will also become a big manager, and I hope a lot of people serve me. So their mood was more for sense gratification than for service to Krishna. The mood of taking sannyas is to become the servant, but their mood was to become the master, to be served, and to enjoy facilities. Sannyas means to give up all facilities. But they were thinking, I will take sannyas and I will enjoy facilities, which is wrong. So, Prabhupada did give a lot of young men sannyas, and a lot of them didn't succeed. They met with difficulties, met with problems. They realized it was going to be very difficult for them to maintain. So, over the years, the ISKCON Society have instituted different conditions before people are awarded sannyas. They have to be usually 40, at least about 40 years of age before they should be considered for sannyas. And they have to prove their detachment by traveling and preaching. Sannyasis are not usually expected to remain in one place too long. So that before they are awarded sannyas, they have to prove their detachment by traveling and preaching. They have also a probationary period to undergo, and they have to travel with another sannyasi. In this way, they have to prove themselves that they're worthy and that they can maintain the sannyas ashram. Because it's a great disturbance if one will accept the renounced order of life and then give up the renounced order of life. That creates some disturbance. Sannyas should not be given up. Once you take the renounced order of life, you should maintain it, even though difficulties may be there. Prabhupada himself has written how the acceptance of the renounced order of life is certainly troublesome. It is not an easy thing. But still, it is required for service to Krishna. It is certainly a part of the Vedic culture, and Prabhupada wanted that within the Krishna conscious society there would be sannyasis who travel and preach and who are dedicated to spreading Krishna consciousness. The example of renounced persons is required, and it's part of the Vedic culture. So Prabhupada said, Prabhupada was a sannyasi himself, and he wanted that others would follow in his footsteps. A striking analogy was given in the Srimad Bhagavatam verse this morning, explaining the relationship between Krishna and his devotee. If a face is nicely decorated, so its reflection in a mirror will also be. Prabhupada explained that, therefore, if Krishna is satisfied, the devotee, as his reflection or reliant part and parcel, is also automatically satisfied. Since Krishna is complete in himself, whatever service we do to please him is actually for our own benefit. So Prabhupada, this analogy is indicating that if the face is nicely decorated, the reflection in the mirror is also. In the same way, if Krishna is satisfied, the devotee is also satisfied. Sometimes people ask, how do we know if we're satisfying Krishna? How do we know if Krishna is pleased? We have to see, are the devotees pleased? If the devotees of Krishna are pleased, then we should think that Krishna must also be pleased. If the devotees are not pleased, then maybe Krishna is also not pleased. So, this is an indication. Prabhupada used our attempts to build a big temple here in Mayapur as a practical example to illustrate his point, giving us deeper realization of the nature of our work. Prabhupada said, everything belongs to Krishna. Just like we are constructing this temple, we are feeling that I am constructing, we are constructing, but actually it is Krishna. The bricks, the iron, or the cement, or anything that we are collecting, that is Krishna's property. The brick is not your property. The earth is not your property. You are taking Krishna's earth, and you are making it a brick. Still, it is Krishna's property. But the endeavor, the energy which you are giving to Krishna, that is taken into account. Oh, he is working for me. He wants to give me something. That Krishna consciousness is important. Otherwise, by his will, by Krishna's own will, he can construct 16,000 palaces for his queens. What with this tiny temple will satisfy him? But still he's satisfied. Oh, you have done so much. Very good. Recognize. Krishna has created the whole universe. He doesn't require any endeavor. Simply by his breathing, many millions of Brahmas are coming out, and each Brahma is creating a universe. So to create a temple, he doesn't require our help. He can create millions of temples by his will. There are already. So we should always remember this, that Krishna does not require our service. But if we give some service to Krishna, that is our benefit. This is the formula. So this is a nice little excerpt from Srila Prabhupada's lecture. Srila Prabhupada is reminding us of our insignificant position. That Krishna doesn't need our service. Krishna doesn't need our offerings. Krishna has so many goddesses of fortune all serving him in the spiritual world. What is the meaning of our service? Krishna doesn't depend on our service, but if we take the effort, make the effort to serve Krishna, we get the benefit. It's for our benefit, not for Krishna's benefit. We have to constantly put this information into our mind, to remind ourselves of how fortunate we are to be able to do some service for Krishna, whether it's chanting His name or cleaning His temple, whatever service we're doing, that we should think that we're very fortunate that we could do these things for Krishna. And always appreciate that. This is Krishna's kindness, that He is giving us this opportunity that we can do service for Him. Gopal Krishna Maharaj, at this time he was not a sannyasi. Gopal Krishna sent a letter enclosing samples of the new Srimad Bhagavatam printed in India on government concessional paper. Prabhupada was very pleased with him for finally getting his books into print here in India. Many other Hindi and English books are to be printed in Delhi at a cost of only 10 rupees each for the best quality paper. Bhargava is production manager and Amoga will help with university sales. In response to Gopal Krishna's request, Prabhupada asked Dayananda to contact Rameshwara in Los Angeles. He wants Rameshwara to send to India, via the devotees coming for the festival, numerous color separations. The booklet, Krishna Consciousness is Authorized, reviews by professors, and a complete list of universities and colleges that have standing orders for his books. Srila Prabhupada countersigned Dayananda's letter, thus clearly declaring his strong desire for this new phase of preaching in India. Srila Prabhupada's scheme is to push these books on a gigantic scale here in India. He is personally organizing and motivating the project. We have especially experienced here that His Divine Grace smiles and is very pleased to hear the comments by the professors. These books are especially Prabhupada's glory, and those comments prove that Prabhupada's glory and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is being appreciated by the intelligent men of the West. Prabhupada recently said, "I know those that are sane, they will accept. No one is distributing so much quantity of religious book. Therefore, I challenge all these fools and rascals. After 80 years, no one can expect to live long. My life is almost ended. It is ended. So you have to carry on, and these books will do everything. Simply by bluffing words, those bogus gurus and yogis are nothing. And when the people read our books, then they will get good opinion. Everywhere, India especially, the book demonstrations and opinions, professors' comments, must be widely spread." A devotee said, "Now we are going to flood India with your books, just like they have done in America." Prabhupada replied, "Thank you, that I want. Then you will be first class. Organize book distribution here, and I should be very much obliged." So, Prabhupada understood the importance of book distribution. He used to give the example how communism had come to India. He said, no communists came, no people came, but the books came. They started printing these books about communism in India. And they circulated the literature on communism. And in this way, people become attracted to communism. They took up communism. You didn't see Russians or Chinese coming here to spread communism. They simply printed some books. And the people became infected. For myself, I remember as a young man, young boy, going to the library in my hometown in England, and I picked up books about, Bengali, Ramakrishna Mission, Vivekananda. They had their books there. I didn't know anything about them, but I saw their books. How did their books get there? I don't know. But even in a small town where I'm from, they had the books in the public library there. So I've always thought about that later on, that they had they distributed this bogus philosophy all over the world, practically. And this is, Prabhupada was certainly aware of these things, and that's why he wanted so much that his own books would be distributed. Because unless people just get the opportunity to read Prabhupada's books, they'll just simply go on and think that all the gods are the same, that all the paths are the same, they all lead to the same goal. You know, they'll simply adopt the same bogus philosophies which have been propagated by these people. So book distribution is a very important part of the establishing the Krishna conscious mission. Of course, book distribution is just one part. Once the books are distributed, we have to start teaching what's in the books, because we do know that a lot of people get the books and they don't take the time to read them, or they say they're reading it, they can't understand it. They need help. They need to have the right association to guide them, to teach them to understand what's in the books. Very important. We do distribute a lot of books, but how many books get read is another thing. It's very important that we're teaching what's in the books. That's why we have to have so many classes, so many programs, giving people an opportunity to understand this knowledge. Once they get the right education, then they can never forget this knowledge. It's so practical and logical and convincing that everyone will be accepted. I'll just read this one last paragraph, the last section, to finish the day. Jaipataka Maharaj returned from Calcutta and reported that his meeting with the government ministers, arranged through Mr. Chaudhary, was very successful. The land acquisition should be no problem and can be done quickly. He explained that land acquisition works in this way. If the government is convinced that a major project is important or beneficial enough for the district, then an average price for a parcel of land for the last 10 years is calculated. The land owners of the plots required must sell at that price. This prevents artificial inflation of land values, which is to no one's benefit. Initially, we are asking for only 23 acres, and we will ask for more later. Anyway, so that's in relation to getting land in Mayapur for the Mayapur project. Now, despite so many years, still there are problems. The government, of course, is communist, and it's a Muslim area, and they're not inclined to have a big Mayapur project there. And although there was talk in these years about support, it never really came. The government didn't give any support, and even they tell frankly they don't want a big temple there. You see? So, quite a challenge to try to do something there in Bengal. So, we hope in the future, of course, the governments are not eternal. The governments will also change. And maybe when the government finally does change, then we will have our big temple in Mayapur. But for now, it's still problems there. There are problems with the government and land and so on. Even despite paying for land, there's still problems. So, however, Prabhupada did want a big temple. Not only Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all the acharyas, they wanted a big temple there in glorification. The Panchatattva have already come there, and they're waiting to have their big temple. Any questions, any comment on this section from Prabhupada's diary?
I did not understand the third question that Madhava Prabhu has asked Srila Prabhupada with respect to is it happening in my mind, or is it happening outside, or is it happening in the spiritual world?
Yeah.
could not understand.
Yeah. Prabhupada explained that it's... So anyway, you understand the question, right? That he wants to know, is happening in the mind or is it pictures? Prabhupada gave the reply that it's happening in the spiritual world. So everything is Krishna's energy. Krishna is the Supreme Spirit and everything is coming from Him. Krishna is everything. Oh, wait. No. Is that the right? Oh, no. The answer was, thinking is a subtle form of matter. This was the point. That thinking is a subtle form of matter. Prabhupada quoted the verse from the Bhagavad Gita, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. So, ether is subtle. Ether is one of the elements, but it's subtle. The mind is more subtle. But they're all matter. They're all material, you see. The mind is material. It's subtle, though. Ether is also subtle. So this is how Prabhupada answered the question. This is all we're given here. Prabhupada is just simply saying that thinking is it's a subtle form of matter. He doesn't say, is it words? He doesn't say it's pictures. He said it's simply subtle. A subtle form of matter. Words, pictures, words are more in the ether. Pictures are something, you know, it's definite matter, more gross. But thinking is a subtle form of matter. Coming from the mind being subtle, so that the thinking process is also subtle. We could say within the mind we may visualize pictures and so on, but they're subtle, still subtle. So this is all Prabhupada commented on his question. The thinking itself is a subtle activity. It's not a gross activity. Subtle activity. But still, it's within in the material realm. The mind is material, so the thinking process is also material, but subtle. That's all Prabhupada commented.
Riksh Maharaj, mind has thinking, feeling, and willing. Krishna consciousness means our thinking, feeling, and willing changing towards Krishna. I am not this body. I am not this mind. I am soul. How this mind relating to the soul? How this thinking, feeling, and willing relating to the soul?
How is it related to the soul? Thinking, feeling, willing related to the soul?
Yes.
Well, it depends on your consciousness. Are you controlling the mind? Are you making use of the intelligence to control the mind? Is your mind surrendered to Krishna? The mind is related to the soul in the sense, well, what is the example? In the chariot, you know, the senses are the horses, the mind is the reins. Intelligence is the driver, and the soul is the passenger on the chariot. The chariot being the body, the material body. So this is a relationship between the soul and the mind. The soul is the passenger on the chariot, whereas the mind is the driving instrument. The driving instrument in the hands of the driver being intelligence. How you use your intelligence. like this, understand. We have to make the mind a friend. Make it friend by bringing it to Krishna, to surrender to Krishna. Intelligence is required. Don't give the mind independence. If the mind is uncontrolled, then there's no, you know, the soul is simply carried. The soul is the passenger on the chariot. And if the driving instruments are not given proper control, then you're in for a rough ride. The soul will have a rough ride on the chariot of the body. But where the intelligence is properly used, then the driving instruments, the mind, is properly used to control the senses. And the chariot can progress for a good journey. So this is an example to relate the soul and the mind. All right?
Mind, intelligence and policy, they are in the contaminated state, therefore we are here in this material world. When they are purified, then the soul is being taken to the spiritual world, isn't it?
Yeah. When they are purified, then the soul
is transferred to the spiritual.
Yes, when we get rid of the subtle body, we have to get rid of the subtle body. To go back to the spiritual world.
You have to get rid of it, you have to purify it.
Well, yes, that's you're getting rid of that false ego. Get rid of the ahankar, right? You have to give up the material body to go back to Godhead. The material body has to be given up. So material body is gross and subtle. The subtle body also has to be given up. To develop the pure spiritual body. The subtle body also keeps the within that subtle body is desire. The subtle body is carrying us from one destination to another, accompanying the soul. But we want that. Finally, before we go back to Godhead, you have to give up all the material elements. The gross and subtle elements. So subtle body also is given up. Subtle body doesn't go back to Godhead. The soul goes back to Godhead. Any more comments?
If the subtle body is dissolved, as you said, then how does the soul goes back home, back to Godhead?
Because the spirit soul itself has the spiritual conception. Within the soul awakens the ability. The soul itself has a spiritual body, right? The spiritual body is developed. With the spiritual body, the spiritual mind, the spiritual intelligence. But not material mind, not material intelligence, but the spiritual mind, the spiritual intelligence, the spirit soul itself has a spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence. We have to give up the material mind, material intelligence. They don't go back to Godhead. But the spirit soul itself has a spiritual mind, a spiritual intelligence. So, I mean, you could say, as Prabhu said, that purify the subtle body. So purify the subtle body means you're giving up the material subtle body. It's becoming the spiritual. But I'm saying that actually it's the spiritual mind, the spiritual intelligence, which is part of the soul, which accompanies with the soul. I mean, because this is subtle also. The mind, the intelligence are subtle. We have to give up the material body before the spiritual body can develop. Isn't it? Mind, intelligence, and false ego. Bina astadar. These are all Krishna's material elements. The material elements are not going to go back to Godhead. We stay here in the material world. The soul goes back to God. But the soul has its own thinking abilities, part of the soul, consciousness, pure consciousness.